Welcome back to, yeah, that's a Pepper Thing. First up, we've got Harrison wrapping his Dr. Pepper in a tiny quilt so it feels at home. Oh, how tender. That's a Pepper Thing! And over to Becca, who's whispering affirmations to her can.
You're sweet. You're unique. You're the best thing I ever poured over ice.
She swears it makes it taste better. It's not a science thing, but it's a Pepper Thing! Why do they all do it? All for that sweet, delicious, truly one-of-a-kind taste of Dr. Pepper. It's a Pepper Thing!
The days are longer, the calendar is filling up, and I want to feel as good as this beautiful summer weather. That's why I've been loving Grüns. It's one daily pack of gummies that covers my greens, vitamins, minerals, and even has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, so I don't need to juggle a complicated wellness routine on top of everything else. They taste amazing, they're easy to toss in my bag on the go, plus they're vegan, gluten-free, and HSA and FSA, eligible for reimbursement. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grüns.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.
Absolute Radio Country is filled with the best sounds from Nashville 24 hours a day. But even we can't fit in everything. You'll find a full story right here. This is Country Music Talk, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the world of country music.
We love bringing you the biggest names from the world of country music here on the podcast, so thank you for listening. Remember to subscribe if you haven't already, and that way you'll never miss an episode. And if you're in the UK, you can listen to Absolute Radio Country live and enjoy the No Repeat Guarantee. It's our promise to never play the same song twice during your workday between 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. Right, on with the podcast.
This is the Country Music Talk Podcast from Absolute Radio Country.
Well, this is nice because sometimes I get homesick, and so instead of just playing country music, sometimes I have to have people from near my hometown into the studio just to keep me on the straight and narrow. It's Absolute Radio Country. I'm Baylen Leonard, and today joined by a band fast becoming one of the most in-demand live country bands out there. Critically acclaimed debut album, Fortune Favors the Bold, was a top 10 hit on the country chart. It's been streamed over 80 million times, and they're currently opening up for one of the biggest artists in not just country music and music in general, Luke Combs. Chase and Isaac, 49 Winchester, hello.
What's up? Thanks for having us in the studio.
It's so nice to have you guys here.
Yeah, man. Glad to be here.
I was saying there about, you know, getting homesick, and listen, people might be tired of me telling this story, but I will never be tired of telling it. Is the first time I saw you guys, I was home for Thanksgiving, and you guys were doing a show in Cumberland Park in Bristol, Tennessee, and my friend Leah Ross, who runs a big festival back home, said, you've got to come see these guys. And I was jet lagged, and it was cold, and I went, and you guys just blew me away. And I came back to the UK, and I was like, we got to play these guys. And we have been playing you nonstop ever since. And now everybody knows your name. It seems like it went from 0 to 60 in no time flat. Does it feel that way for you guys?
A part of it definitely does. I think that sort of steep uptick feels like it's been sudden, but it was something that was so long in the making that it's sort of an overnight success, a decade in the making kind of thing. You know what I mean? So, you know, we were grinding away at it for a long time, playing the regional scene and the local scene around home. And But the rise that we've kind of experienced in the last year has been something unprecedented for us. You know?
If I'm honest, when I saw you guys in Bristol, I just assumed you were a big regional band that everybody knew, because everybody knew you back there. And I just thought, oh, they're this big regional band. Why are they not bigger than this? And then, you know, suddenly you are bigger than this. But you guys, like you said, have been doing this for a while. You met like growing up, right? Yeah. Is that how you met?
Yeah, next door neighbors.
Right, okay.
Right across the street from one another. And two of the other guys in the band, Bus and Noah, they're from the same little town in Virginia. Not next door neighbors, but neighbors certainly, you know, within walking distance of each other. So, you know, we've known each other for a long time. It wasn't one of those situations where we went out and found and pieced together a band. It was more like the guys that already knew each other and had played some music. You know, I always tell people the reason the band's lineup is what it is because we were the only people of our age that played music in our town.
Right. So you didn't have a lot to pick from.
There
weren't auditions or anything like that.
No, there were not. So it's kind of an unconventional approach. We know that it's something that's kind of rare. It almost feels more like a family band than a you know, a business enterprise, which I think is a cool part of it. And people can see that from the outside in, and I think that's part of why people latch on to us. Is, you know, it's an odd story. Lifelong friends, still here together, you know, approaching our 30s and still kicking it.
Yeah. And were you doing it to, I mean, obviously you were interested in music, but did you guys form the band with the thought of like, we want to be a band? Or was it, you know, because I grew up in a small town and sometimes you just do things because you're bored or you do things because you're trying to figure out what it is that you want to do. Was it always from the beginning like music, we want to be an actual band?
I think so. I mean, I think there it maybe wasn't that much of a conscious decision at the very initial onset. I think it was more like we were just getting together and jamming, and then we realized that it felt great and that it sounded great and that it was something that was worth pursuing. Mm. And I think really after that, shortly after that, we really locked into the idea that like, okay, this feels too good to stop. So let's continue and push it as far as we can possibly push it.
So we had Luke Combs on the show, and it was right after he had worn your T-shirt, and it was before you guys had been announced as opening up for him over here, mm-hmm. and he had worn your T-shirt, and you know it had just created this enormous buzz around you guys for people who didn't know you. And of course, you know, Luke being Luke, he was like, well, I don't really think about what I wear. And I thought, but you have to know what you're doing when you do something like that. Like, you know, and he was like, I am aware that it would have an impact. But sure. Did you guys feel that particular impact at that moment? Because certainly your socials must have went crazy and people must have started going, who is this band?
Yeah, they did for sure. I've told this story before, but I remember the day that that order came through. There was the Black Horse and Rider tee in a 2XL for a Luke Combs, and I was like, wait a minute, surely this is not the same guy.
Well, he just ordered it?
Is there more than one? Yeah, he just bought it.
Like from your website?
Yes.
And are you at home boxing this stuff up?
At that time, maybe still. Chase was dealing with some of the merch. I don't know. Yeah,
I hope you threw in an extra sticker or something.
Yeah, I think we definitely a bunch of extra stuff because we were all excited.
And but you obviously didn't know like what he was going to do with it, when he was going to wear it, if he was going to be seen wearing it.
We had never met Luke or anything.
And you didn't know he was a fan until that point.
No, we weren't really even aware that he knew we existed until the merch order came through. Yeah. And then it turns out he had two 49 shirts, one of which is a really limited. We made like 200 of them, maybe.
Oh, wow.
And it's like this motorcycle helmet clad skull with the Roman numeral for 3, because it was when we released 3, like one of our early records. Yeah, he got a hold of one of those somehow. So I was like, man,
so he's
this
been
guy's
a long
been
time
digging
fan.
In. Yeah, I guess so.
Well, that'll be worth something one day if Luke Combs ever falls on hard times. He can pop that on eBay.
I don't foresee it happening.
And it'll be fine. And then, so he ordered the merch, and then at some point the call came, hey, will you open up for him on the European and UK? Yeah. By that point, had you met him, talked to him?
No. We had corresponded just really briefly some online, but hadn't met, hadn't really, you know, had time to shake hands and howdy. Yeah.
We met in Oslo.
We met him in Oslo for the first time.
Oh, right.
First,
on this tour.
Yep, yeah, first date of this tour. I'll never forget. I was at my house. I'm going to cry talking about it. I was at my house, and Jacob, our agent, called me, and he was like, buddy. And I was like, anytime he goes, buddy, it's always either really good or really bad.
Right.
And it was really good that day. And he told us, you know, the news about the tour that was lined up and, you know, 13 countries, a bunch of hillbilly kids from Central Appalachia coming over here and playing 13 countries in Europe to stadiums. Like it was the honor of a lifetime. And we're, you know, still in the swing of it. And then our own little headline thing at the Lafayette. But man, this whole tour has just been an honor to be on. Luke's the best dude I've ever met on the road. He's super humble, super common. All of his bandmates are the same way. All of the people in his camp are the same way. They're just really genuine folks that want to be out here and enjoy the rigors of touring. You know what I mean? It's not for everybody, and I know that there's kind of a lot of people think of it as a lot of people know musicians to be cranky, you know what I mean, and unpersonable, and nobody in that camp is that way. So that was a huge relief, you know, when we got over here and we're like, dude, these guys are just like us.
They're just good people. Like, he's surrounded himself with good people and people that he's known for a long time as well, it seems as well.
Yeah.
And he just always seems like such a nice guy, you know, and has all the time in the world. I want to talk a little bit about what you were saying about, you know, being kids from Appalachia and suddenly finding yourself overseas, not just overseas, but in 13 countries. And, you know, leaving aside the kind of playing stadiums bit of it for a moment, I absolutely relate to this because, you know, I grew up in a trailer park in Bristol, Tennessee, down a gravel road. And for me, getting out meant maybe I'd go to New York City, you know, let alone going to other parts of the world. And for you guys to be able to do it this way, what an exciting thing to do. But did you have wanderlust? Like when you were growing up? Because, you know, there are plenty of people, like my brother and sister, they are happy as Larry to just stay put right there in the hills and valleys that we grew up in, and they don't really have any sort of interest in seeing the outside world. And that's cool. That must be a lovely thing to not have that kind of pull.
Sure.
But I always had it. Did you guys have it?
Yeah. Always had it.
Yeah, I think so. It was something that we really fell in love with as soon as we started the band and started touring outside the region. Yep. As kids, you know, not as much, but as we grew into sort of, you know, young adults and became more interested in music, I think that it was like the idea of traveling and playing music for a living is something that's always, you know, that's always been there. So, yeah, I think so. I think that even as content as I am to still be living in my hometown, you know, I live 3 miles from where I grew up. So even it being really content there and being happy to go back every time that I go back, it's still, you know, you're back for a couple of weeks and you're like, all right, let's go see the rest of the world again.
I mean, I live here. I don't live there, but I get to go back and, you know, be in Bristol or see my family and my friends often enough that it feels like, you know, it keeps my feet on the ground. So I can imagine for you guys, which are on this whole other level, to be able to go back and just close your door and know that you're home must feel good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it certainly does.
Before Luke Combs, though, I mean, you guys already had such a fan base here. C2C earlier this year, you know, I saw, it seems like you guys did about 25 shows during C2C. Every time I looked, I was like, oh, it's 49 Winchester again, which is a great thing because it gave so many people opportunities to see you live, because I knew already from the reaction that we got from playing your stuff that people were digging in and absolutely loving it. Going to those shows at C2C, it didn't feel like an introduction. You know, it felt like these were fans. People were there. Those shows were busy.
Yeah, I mean, we saw, you know, that was our first ever play anywhere in Europe, anywhere outside of the States for that matter. And we saw our, you know, people wearing our merch in the crowd and people that knew the lyrics and stuff like that. So
that was Luke Combs, by the way.
Yeah. That was him in the back there. You know, the first set at C2C, we played at the Barrel House stage and I didn't know what it was or where it was. And I was like, it would be really cool if there were 100 people here for our first Europe show. And there were 1,800 people there. And a queue at the door that was being turned away.
Yeah.
So that's when we kind of first had some inkling of...
That it was connecting over here.
That it was, the dots were being connected over here in Europe in the same way that they had in the States. And kind of at the same time, I think it really coincided. Like, the rise that we took on in the States kind of... on a smaller scale, albeit over here in Europe, I think it just sort of happened at the same time. And by the time we got to Europe, we were like, whoa, the seed's already been planted here. It was really cool to get in there for that first set. The first time I saw the crowd was when I walked onto the stage to play the show. And I was like, taken aback, you know what I mean?
And then I saw your final show of CTC as well in the Indigo, I think it was. And that was just...
That was a lot of fun, too.
Amazing. It was amazing. Isn't it great how Universal... things are. Obviously, it's a different time now and, you know, the internet and all that. But, you know, like growing up, I think sometimes we're led to believe that people don't understand people or that emotions or situations or the way that someone is raised means that they're so different than somebody else. But then music is one of the great kind of uniters. We know that. But also the stuff that you guys are singing about, some of it's super universal and some of it's very personal or very specific, you know, whether it's about Russell County or whatever.
Sure.
And yet here you are, you know, thousands of miles away from home and people connect to it and people get it and people relate. And I just think that's a wonderful thing. It must feel great for you.
Yeah, it definitely does. You know, I've heard a lot of people say, I have no idea where Russell County, Virginia is, and I've never been there, never seen it on a map, but that song makes me miss my home, you know, wherever that might be, whether it's Sweden or Canada or Mexico or anywhere, you know? So I think that there's a lot of things that you can do as a songwriter to make things more applicable to people, even if it's something that's really specific to you initially, I think if the song is written well, it's going to be something that people can latch on to that are, you know, from all walks of life.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And actually, you see that. You see that every night.
Yep.
And certainly on this tour, you must be seeing that too. Country music as well, I think people have a tendency to think it has to be one thing or the other. And what I love about what's happening, not just with you guys, but with people like Zach Bryan, you know, that there's this more kind of rootsier, authentic sound that people are really latching onto, but that sure. also the industry, if we will, in quotes, has been like, aha, you know, there doesn't have to be. And by the way, I'm down with like pop country. If it's good, it's good, right? Sure. But it's also nice to see the this other side of country music, A, being popular, but B, the industry recognizing that it is a viable route commercially as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was something that was a sort of a niche
yeah.
market for a long time, and it had all kinds of different labels, whether it was Americana or alternative country or this or that. And I think that people have just kind of gotten back to the roots of saying, man, country music is country songs sang by country people, and that's the way it is. And
those country people can be from anywhere, too.
Sure, yeah. sure. It's more of a country must be countrywide, as Norman would say. Yeah, it's you know,
I think it's a vibe,
everywhere.
Isn't
it?
It is. Like, it's
yeah,
more
it's
of a vibe. Like, you know,
it's a state of mind more than
it's
more
a
than
state
it is
of mind, yeah.
a state of a set of circumstances.
Yeah.
So, you know, to see that trend changing and being a part of that, we owe a lot of it to guys that have sort of carried the torch in front of us, like Tyler Childers
yeah.
and some folks like that, that really helped turn the world on to stuff that harkens back to traditional country music, but it's definitely distinctly blended with other things. You know what I mean? We never set out to be a country band. We never set out to really fit in any particular box at all. It just happened to be that the musical influences that we had on our life and our lives and the place that we came from, that's the way it came out. So, and I think Tyler's the same way. You know, a lot of what he's doing now is really traditional country.
Yeah.
But, you know, the early Tyler stuff, it was kind of rode that line between that sort of psychedelic, spacey, hippie country of the 60s and traditional country and some rock and roll, you know, kind of spirit about it.
And Sturgill Simpson before him.
Sturgill the very same
well.
Way, yeah. And Stapleton, you know, being another Kentucky boy that made a living writing in Nashville for a long time. But then when he set out and did his own thing, he kind of went against the grain a little bit and achieved, you know, great success with it. So it's good to see people that aren't necessarily fitting in with that formulaic idea of what people thought that country music had to be. It's great. And it's great. You know, it's great to see that expanding and see that the genre itself is growing, not just in terms of how big the fan base is, but in terms of what country really is, what country music really is.
Yeah, I agree. Because, you know, I grew up listening to all kinds. Everybody grew up listening to all kinds of stuff, no matter where you're from,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
And even, I think, more so today with the way that you can listen to music. And, you know, I know everybody says algorithms are really bad, but sometimes they can be really good because they might suggest something to you that you never would have found on
sure.
your own.
A million artists that I can think of off the top of my head I've discovered in some shuffle playlist that, you know what I mean, or on the radio,
yeah.
you know, like just... Yeah, I think it's a good thing.
What were you guys listening to growing up?
I went through a lot of different phases where I was kind of very specifically honed in on one thing at one time. We've all been through a metalhead phase
yeah.
where we were listening to, you know, Slayer and 80s thrash metal, and then it kind of evolved into Slipknot and Lamb of God and some
yeah,
bands like that.
The natural progression.
The natural progression for country artists. When we first started the band, I thought really that the direction it was going to go was going to be a lot more of a kind of a folky string band sound.
Okay.
I loved pre-World War II blues and ragtime. That's like what I cut my teeth
wow,
on
okay.
guitar-wise, which I know is a strange thing to hear. But
I love ragtime, though.
You know, I
grew up listening. It's not often cited as.
No, it is not.
It's an influence, though.
But yeah, guitar players like Blind Blake and Lemon Jefferson and guys like that.
But yeah, when we started the band, us two and Bus, we were all acoustic, just the three guys, and you know we were
two guitars and a banjo, so it was
right.
more string bandy,
right,
you know
right.
what I mean? But you know, after that, I grew up just sort of by default being surrounded by a lot of classic rock,
right.
Not just because my parents were of that age, but it's like in Appalachia, every radio station is either a country station or a classic rock station.
Yes.
So it's just kind of what you're, you know, what's around.
And still, it still is. Every time I get in a rental car, sure. I'm like, oh, country, classic rock, country,
yep,
classic rock.
In alternating succession yeah. over and over forever. I love blues. I love soul. I love R&B. You know, I love Al Green. I love Aretha Franklin. Mm. I love great singers with great songs and something to say. And no matter what that genre might be, if it fits that criteria, it's something I'll like.
Just before I let you guys go, you've re-recorded a couple of fan favorites, Chemistry and Everlasting Lover. What made you re-record these?
Just a kind of a fresh take on it. We have the, you know, updated band lineup with
right.
Tim and Justin.
Yeah, these are the first two recordings with this lineup. And actually the okay. first time that lineup ever existed was the night that you saw us in Bristol. It was Tim and Justin's first
oh, really?
Show. Yes, yeah, they yeah. were filling in at the time. And that was the last time they ever filled in because they were permanently on the roster at that point. Yeah. There had been a little bit of turmoil and a lineup change, and we needed those guys to step in and do the thing. That was also the coldest show that I've ever played
it
in my entire
so
life.
It was so cold.
It was yeah. frigid.
Yeah,
it
you can see your
playing
breath.
Guitar almost impossible. So I'm glad you said it was a great show.
It was a great show, but
I
it was absolutely
like
freezing.
Yeah. About to get, like, you know, frostbite status on my fingers.
See, I always wonder that because I was freezing in the audience, and Leah was like, come over here. There was some sort of heater by the sound yeah, desk or something. Yeah. But I always think when you're on stage, you're like under oh, the yeah, light, you're giving it, you're not feeling it. So yeah. it's nice to know, actually, you're feeling it
yeah,
too.
Some of those nights, yeah. You can't rock hard enough to get warm. You know what I mean?
You try as you might.
But yeah, the Chemistry and Everlasting Lover thing, I think that those songs just have been two that really, they've really developed a lot with this new lineup, and they've really kind of come into their own and taken on sort of a new life. So we wanted to get something out there that the fans could hear that sounds more like what we do live now
yeah.
than what we recorded, you know, those years ago when we really were pretty green. You know, we were just kids in the scene then, and I think that a lot's changed since then. So we wanted to capture that.
Well, we love them. So thanks for coming in.
Absolutely.
I could talk to you guys for ages because I just, you know, I feel like we should just go down the road, sit on my mom's porch and
yep.
keep talking.
Have a glass of tea.
Yeah, some sweet tea.
A cup of tea, a glass of sweet tea.
Do you get a chance to have any, I know you've been quite busy on this tour, but do you get a chance to have some delicacies in the UK or get out and,
yeah,
you know, do all that?
We're always in pursuit of
delicacies.
Great local food.
Yep. Okay.
Delicacies of all sorts.
So what have you tried since you've been in the UK? Have you had a chance yet?
We're getting ready to do, we got suggested a great Indian restaurant, Dishoom.
Dishoom, of yep. course, that, naturally.
That's
great.
Natural.
It's
apparently,
great, but it
when
is.
Musicians get to London, that's the first question that they have is, where is Dishoom and how do I get there?
Yeah, people are really into Dishoom, but yep. it's great.
But yeah, I mean, the
it's right around the corner.
We always try to do some traditional grub too. The first time we were here, we stayed over in Putney and we went over across the bridge to this place called the Eight Bells Pub and got fish and chips.
Of course, you have to.
You know, they've been
mushy peas.
They've been selling, yeah, absolutely. They've been selling fish and chips and beer.
Yeah.
For longer than
our country
existed, yeah, which is astonishing to me. There are floorboards in there that are older than America. but all over, man. Scandinavia was great. The food up there was fantastic. Germany, oh, we had a great meal.
Oh, yeah. Bratwurst.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Schweingeschnitzel.
Isaac and Chase, 49 Winchester. Thank you guys so much
yeah,
for coming
for
in. It's
us.
So great to see you over here, and I'll see you real soon.
Sure thing.
The Country Music Talk Podcast from Absolute Radio Country.
An in-depth look behind the scenes at the world of country music.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll have another dropping soon for y'all, so don't forget to keep it country.
If you enjoy the Country Music Talk podcast, chances are you'll also enjoy Absolute Radio Country. It's the place where real music matters, and we love country music just as much as you do. You'll find us online on the free Absolute Radio app, on digital radio throughout the UK, or just ask your smart speaker to play Absolute Radio Country.